This is Corporal Papes, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio. I just wanted to take a minute in this little intro before the intro to give you an update on some of the things we got going on here at today's Boondoggle. And we recently launched an email account. So if you have any questions, suggestions, or comments, you're enjoying the show, you want to see something different, you want to see certain guests on the show, you can reach us at todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. And as you know, the coronavirus lockdown has hit a lot of us financially. Boondoggle didn't escape it either. And if you want to support us financially so we can get you these interviews that you enjoy each week, you can donate to our GoFundMe. There's you get on GoFundMe, look up today's Boondoggle. We got a GoFundMe that will be ongoing. And as well as a Venmo, you can donate. If you use Venmo, go to Venmo, Domain, or today's Boondoggle. And then also there's our Anchor sponsorship on the Anchor app, anchor.fm. Look up today's Boondoggle and you can become a monthly sponsor to us there. As you know, this is a veteran-owned and operated program we got going on here. It's incredibly therapeutic for a guy like myself who, you know, is a veteran with PTSD and anxiety. Just gets me out there talking with people and gets me out of my comfort zone. And it's been awesome. But it all costs us, you know, the travel, accommodations, to get to these interviews that you want to hear. So if you can help out anyway, we truly appreciate it. Also, please follow us on social media. It's at Today's Boondoggle. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just please follow, subscribe, comment, download the episodes. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, you know, any of the programs that you use to listen to your podcast. Please. Do whatever you can to support us, and hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
You're listening to today's Boondoggle with your host, the one and only Bill Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
And today we're doing another special Veterans Edition. You know, this was something that we've been wanting to do for a long time. I mean, actually, you know, the birth of the Boondoggle was something that came through the minds of me and my guest here today. And it's good to finally get you on. And we're going to talk a little bit and get to know a brother of mine that I served with for many years, many stories. Some, I don't know, we'll share them when we can share them. Got to see when the statute of limitations and all that has passed us by. But anyway, I want to introduce my friend, Jim Cafaro.
Hello. Great to be here. We've been talking about doing this for freaking ever. So
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go on a whim.
Here, let's make this happen. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. We served together, met in ACU too. And, you know, we just kind of clicked. We same kind of humor and stuff like that. And we always seem to be able to play well off one another's humor, you know, like and kept the unit entertained and all that good stuff. But we always had all these plans of like we're going to do this. We're going to make this happen. We're going to make that happen. And then life happens.
Yeah. Life gets in the way.
Life kind of gets in the way. But, you know, you're here now, and let's tell a little bit, you know, our virtual audience a little bit about yourself. So, petty officer in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when did you know that you wanted to serve your country? How old were you when you think you...
That's a, that's a real good question. I knew pretty early, because I come from a family of Navy vets. So actually the branch I was going into was a no-brainer. Grandfather, World War II bosun's mate. We can go on and on about him.
Yeah, you just showed me his picture, man.
There's citations Beards. From Eleanor Roosevelt, Battle of Merrimack. He was actually frozen to his gun. He refused to come in. His body was actually frozen to his weapon, his deck weapon. He served in the armed guard. So to the viewing audience, back in those days, the merchant marine were pretty vital in transporting supplies and everything to all of our ally forces. Well, they got the idea that they would put U.S. Naval guns to protect these convoys and stuff. So they used U.S. Navy sailors to do that. And that's what my grandfather did. Vitally, vitally important. So, yeah, he was in a battle. And you get up into these regions going into Merrimack, Russia. And very cold, freezing temperatures. And he just fucking wouldn't quit. So his body was actually frozen to the gun. And they had to come out and provide care and everything. And he had a citation presented to him by Eleanor Roosevelt. I got the picture somewhere.
Wow,
I need to find
wow.
that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean,
they don't make
so
men
he,
like that anymore.
Yeah. So he, yeah. No, they don't. Oh my God. And you know, that's why I've been wanting to get you on and get started, because I know we'll eventually get into subjects
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. So to answer your question, yeah, I'm sorry. So as a kid, I never really had a dad. My mom divorced my biological father. I think I was like 1.5, 2 years old. Never knew him. So never really grew up with a dad per se. I had a stepfather. That's another story. But my grandfather was like a dad. And just as a kid, talking to him, hearing all these stories about World War II and how things were when he was younger. And I was just enamored that these depression era folks live like this. So Navy guy, seeing all the pictures and all of this and that. And I always had an affinity for ships and water. And I think you and I were talking about it a little earlier when we were walking around my house with all my nautical shit, the tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know,
I didn't appreciate it when I was young and in there, you know, but, you know, now that I'm older and I go back and like, you know, if I'm watching anything that has to do with the Navy, like from Hollywood or TV, man, when they throw in the tradition stuff, I'm like, they did their research. I know they did their homework, you know,
right.
So much to that, you know?
Yeah. The Navy, I mean, I don't have anything against, I respect all militaries, all branches, but the Navy is just shrouded in tradition. And a lot of folks just don't understand our sense of humor and the types of traditional things that we have. I always thought the dress blues were cool.
Yeah.
A lot of people call them faggoty uniforms and, you know, this and that, but I always thought they looked badass. So that's just
Jack
me.
Nicholson would say yeah. that stuff. Yeah. But yeah. But so when you you talked about, you know, your grandpa and stuff. Well, first when you were explaining it to me how his body was frozen to the gun, I thought he passed and they found it. But no, he survived that, had to get treated and all that, and
right.
was around to share all those stories, you know. But then, you know, you finish high school, and I mean, was there, you know, yep. you went to the recruiting office and what?
Yeah, I went in real young, 17. So I actually delayed entried at 16. So at 16, I knew when I graduate, I'm gone. I'm going to go check this out. And I graduated on June 6th and June 27th. I was in boot camp.
Mm. In Great Lakes.
Yeah, 1989.
Wow. So go through boot camp, and then your first duty station was at ACU-2 then?
Yeah, and that's the irony, which, you know, later on how we met. My 4 years of active duty were at ACU-2 in Little Creek.
And what was that like, you know, coming into that unit on the active side?
Well, you know, now we're talking, what, 31 years ago? It was hardcore compared to what's going on today. A lot of cussing, swearing, a lot of drinking, a lot of bar fighting, a lot of tattoos. Tattoos weren't really popular in mainstream America like they are now. You got, you know, fucking grandmothers with tattoos on their titties and shit now, and on their face and on their legs and ass. I had never seen tattoos on the human body like I did when I met Master Chief. What the hell was his name?
Was it 1 year?
Yeah, TC. TC 1 year. He had fouled anchors drilled into his teeth. His earlobes were tattooed. His chest, his whole back. I mean, just shit from everywhere. And knuckles tattooed, stand fast. Yeah, all this crazy shit. So
hardcore.
Yeah, so when I got to ACU2, there were no modern conveniences. It was all fucking Quonset huts. It was like real run down. It was like Gomer Pyle Quonset huts. You slept in them. The quarterdeck watch, all that. It was all in Quonset huts.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it was a trip. And then you asked about boot camp. Went to Great Lakes. Great Lakes was all boys, all guys. You know, you wore dungarees and Cambry shirts and your white leggings. They actually had a room.
Learn how to make them into a life preserver,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, all stuff. That bullshit. Rip your pants off and learn how to make a flotation device out of them. I don't know. It was just different back then. Like, one of the things that I distinctly remember is, you didn't walk anywhere. Now, I don't know, because you're just a couple years behind me. I remember at Great Lakes, you did not walk anywhere. If you got a chit and you needed to go to medical or whatever, you actually had to run. So you're in the Chicago heat with fucking blue jeans.
Yeah.
You know,
denim.
Yeah, denim. You got all these pimples and fucking rashes and shit all over your leg, and you had to run everywhere. And if you got caught walking, you actually got written up.
Yeah.
So you had to run, and you got fucking boondockers on and wool socks.
Oh, man, yeah. These kids don't know today.
And you didn't sit either. So if you went into a training class or whatever, you marched in, you were in perfect line, and they told you to drop, and you just dropped right down Indian style.
Yeah.
You just dropped straight down. You didn't, you just fucking dropped, you know?
Yeah.
Boy, what your body can do when you're young. I mean, look at some of this shit we had back then. The grinder.
Yeah.
The grinder. That's where you PT'd on the grinder. It was like this bumpy fucking concrete.
And your flesh friggin' much was grinded.
You're doing sit-ups and push-ups on fucking bumpy concrete.
Oh, my God. See, you know, and I wonder, you know, I was just thinking about today when I was working out my trainer and like, getting down into push-up position now, you know, it's just like, it takes me a little bit longer than it used to back then.
Well, we're old fat fucks now.
Yeah, you know that, and just, man, arthritis.
Where did you go to boot camp?
I went to Great Lakes also.
Okay, yeah. So did you drill with the, like, World War II M1 rifles and all that?
Yeah.
Them big, heavy fucking...
Yeah.
Do you remember what they called duck walking? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was what, like, kind of like backwards, like a spider thing? Or
well, no. Like they would wake us up at like 4:30 in the morning with nothing but our fucking skivvies on, and they'd make us grab this M1, which is like, I don't know, 7-8 pounds or whatever, and you actually had to bend down like a duck and hold the rifle straight out like this, and duck walk around the fucking barracks.
No, I must have missed out on that one. I remember the one walk that Meps made us do, you know, naked, just so they could make sure that, you know, everything, there's no obstructions or, you know, whatever, in our cavities. So, like, you went through boot camp, you graduated, mm-hmm. Great Lakes, get to ACU2.
Right, ACU.
Your time in ACU2 active. What are like some of the oddest things that you say you may have witnessed or experienced while serving?
Well, I don't know if we got enough time in this podcast because the irony behind the whole thing is that I think the stuff that we were able to do and get away with back then would absolutely not be tolerated today.
No.
I think the Navy has really, you know, changed a lot of their culture, obviously. They don't even have bars on base anymore. So they've really changed the whole drinking culture and all of that. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's just the way it is today.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did a lot of shit that today you'd be processed out. So I get there. I already told you it was basically kind of archaic. Started out on Mike 8 boats. And one day, I'm standing at quarters and this little thing called Desert Storm come along. And they were looking for volunteers, and an LCU that had already deployed over to the Gulf and was doing operations was short an engine man. So I'm like 18, 19, and I said, well, I'll go. And that was a whole new experience. They put me on a plane. I flew out of Philadelphia, flew to Bahrain, spent a couple of days in Bahrain filling fucking sandbags and sweating.
Yeah.
Flew me out to the USS Nassau, and that's when I met the crew of the 1654. So you're the new guy. So it always sucks to be the new guy, and yep. I was treated accordingly. I mean,
there's always some sort of indoctrination or
yeah. You know, I mean, initiation. Nobody real asshole craft master. His name was Jimmy Day. He was a senior chief, real asshole chief engineer. They didn't have a sense of humor. They didn't have a sense of humor when we got back, even in peacetime. So, the real fun started when that craft master and chief engineer got replaced. Hmm. So we get this chief bosun's mate. I don't know if I should even mention his name because I'm going to disclose some.
Well, yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, whatever you think, it won't cause anybody any grief or OPSEC.
Well, we'll just let him remain. We'll just call him Boats for right now. This fucking dude was great. And you talk about a party animal. So, our LCU and about three others have to go in the yards, and we take the intercoastal waterway from Norfolk all the way down to Florida to a yard. Now, I don't know if a lot of people are even familiar with the intercoastal waterway, but it is a beautiful stretch of water. Mm. And we go all the way down there, and on these LCUs, we have armories on them. So we've got machine guns, we've got the old Vietnam-style M16s, we've got M79 grenade launchers, we've got 50 cals, whatever. So we're going down the intercoastal waterway, and the chief comes to all stop, and we're looking over in the woods, and there's deer. This motherfucker goes and gets a M16 and shoots a fucking deer. We drag it from the woods back on the boat, clean it, and had venison for dinner. Because we've got a galley on this, too. There's only 13 of us on this boat.
Yeah,
you know, for those viewers that don't know. We would do the shit paper Olympics. Basically, you take your pants off, you stuff toilet paper up your ass, catch it on fire, and race other people up and down the deck. Yeah, stuff that people would think today was completely either homosexual or fucking insane, but we thought it was funny. Yeah, great guy, did a lot of partying. We worked hard and we partied hard. So it was just little wild shit like that. Like I said, I don't expect everybody to appreciate the Navy sense of humor. I remember this chief being at the enlisted club, and there were some female chiefs drinking. I don't know, something weird happened, and one of them threw a tampon at him. And he actually pulled his fucking pants down and shoved that tampon up his ass in front of everybody with the string the hanging out.
Club.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was just insane shit. And like I said, you can do far, far less of things and you're like completely put out now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, oh, so you don't you don't fuck around like that now. he'd go in and take like fucking urinal cakes out of the urinal and come back and like act like he was licking on them and shit. And I mean, the guy was insane, but he was, that's just how he got it on, man.
But you respected him and you followed him and did what
very
he taught you.
Very right? knowledgeable, great fucking operator, great with the craft coming in and out of, you know, the LHAs, great, just a great guy, knew his rate. Just a very funny guy, and that's just how you rolled back then. Like yeah, I said, yeah. You do shit like that now, and people would look at you like a freak, but ironically, you've got all these people dressing like this, and men like a woman, and a woman like this, so I don't even know why it would be fucking so, remotely shocking now, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah, there's, you know, we got to pick and choose the outrage of the week, but anyway, what was, without breaking OPSEC, what was, like, the worst place that you served in? Would you say when you went over to Desert Storm, or?
Well, Desert Storm, you know, obviously that just pales in comparison to, you know, this 20-year fucking thing we're doing over in the Middle East now, but, No, I wouldn't. I don't really have any regrets anywhere. We did a lot of work with the Marines, landed a lot of equipment on the beaches. You know, they refer to ACU-2 as the workhorse of the fleet. I mean, you work.
Yeah.
A lot of 16, 20, 22-hour days, man.
Unless you had admin.
But. Yeah, unless you were a fucking yeoman. But we're not, you know, I got administrative duties to tend to. You can't get away with that as an engineman.
No. And then where would you say was the best place that you've been to your time?
You know, I did a couple med cruises that were great. Been to the Caribbean, been to North Africa, been to the Middle East. I didn't really care for that. Just really didn't care for that. Maybe it was the food, going into restaurants and there's fucking like just meat hanging out with flies all over it, and
just, it took this long for Corona, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, yeah, yeah, which makes you think. But anyway, this one you ought to like. What's one of your pet peeves that you have with civilians since transitioning out of the military?
One of them. I don't know. I met a lot of good people, and I've had a lot of jobs. Worked as a merchant marine. Worked in steel in steel mills. Maybe the work ethic. I mean, not to blow my own horn, and I have nothing against partying.
Yeah, yeah.
I have nothing against partying hard, but
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, yeah. Get your fucking job done, man, and just. Some kind of a resemblance of an effort into it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, your union steward can't get you out of, you know, productivity sometimes, you know? Oh, man. So what is something that you will always carry with you from your time in the service?
Do you mean, like, anal shit? Like, shit that, like, do I still fold my clothes the same way I did? And
no, I mean, like, just, I mean, something that you gain from it that it still helped make you who you are. You know?
Well, it, you know, it instills a sense of...
not just like lighting toilet paper in your ass.
Yeah,
and racing,
you know,
people.
You know, racing people up and down the deck to see whose ass hairs catch on fire first. No, nothing like that. You know, going in at such a young age, like I said, at 17, that was my college. The Navy was a wake up call, and just the knowledge and the schools and the learning. And look, I get it. There's a lot of folks that exercise their opinion and think that people that go into the military are, you know, just shy of being retards. No, I mean, you know, let's call it what it is. A lot of folks think that people that go in the military, it's because there's nothing better for them, or
it's their only option.
That's their only option.
Dead or jail.
And the reality of it is you may have a faction of that, but I don't think there's anybody that's as trained as well. And I've some of the most talented people in this country that this country produces served in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no cakewalk.
No.
But I think a lot of people view it as, oh, you must be a fucking loser.
I mean, I'm worried about, you know, where it's come from, where it was when we went to boot camp. I mean, now we've heard the, you know, about timeout cards and all that other stuff.
Stop it. Oh, my God. My feet are so sore. Jesus. Timeout. My ass crack is real sweaty. I think I'm getting a rash. Timeout.
And it's just like, I'm grateful for, you know, and you know, I mean, you serve with me, so I'm not going to sit here and bullshit that, you know, I was Mr. like hard charger or anything like that. But, you know, I still showed up, you know,
right.
I was there when I needed to be there. I, you know, contributed what I needed to contribute. And, you know, there was other options. You know, but they're like you, you know, I mean, I was raised by a World War II Marine dad. So there was that pride. You wanted to do more.
Right.
And, you know, looking back now, older, you know, with a more mature mind, man, I wish I would have did it all active.
But sure.
It is.
And, you know, and yeah. And those are those are some of the regrets. I regret it. I think I could have went a lot further. I mean, not that I'm regretting anything. For Christ's sakes, I went in as an E-nothing. Non-rate, 17 years old, did 4 years, and had already been up for E5 several times. I just knew I was getting out and didn't put the fucking effort into studying. I'm not going to lie about it, but I got out with an honorable discharge, and how the fuck that happened, I don't know. No.
That was back when, you know, instead of the paper trail and all the paperwork and, like, writing you up and shit, there was a closed-door meeting, you know? Either you had a closed door one-on-one that you came out maybe feeling a little sore afterwards. Things were slammed and, you know, maybe including your head against something. Or there was just, you know, the chief sat around you and they, you know, they tore you up. And they said, look, man, you can't do this. This is a no-no. This is all right. This is a no. I mean, I think that's what saved my ass, and I was able to wear gold in my dress blues.
Yeah, you get gold stripes. you know, it's funny that you bring that up, because like I said, from 89 to 93, that time frame, there was a lot of political stuff that was going on. Bill Clinton was coming into office, and the PC culture was really starting to move out, and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, back in those earlier days with me, fucking officer. Yeah. I was never intimidated or afraid of any officer, but if you were going to see the command master chief, you were fucking trembling.
Yeah.
And in my case, it would have been TC1 year, who was known throughout the entire fucking fleet. The guy's fucking truck looked like a battleship. It was painted haze gray. It had like a water line. There was all that bosun's mate not work. He would pull
the
in.
The teeth and the stand fast tattoos.
Yeah, yeah, that's all you know? Boy, you were trembling. If you were in enough trouble that you had to go see fucking Master Chief, oh, you ain't shitting. You were leaving with something stuck up somewhere and something hurting. And it was usually a boot firmly planted in your ass.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I remember my time in, too, like, you know, and it was, I ended up, you know, being in Airedale and active duty and working on the F-14, so it's like there was a, you know, the officers were like Maverick, you know, from Top Gun. They were, like, cool, and you call them by their call sign. Right. It wasn't like, you know, stand salute and attention on deck or anything like that. It was more laid back, so there was kind of a culture shock when I left that to come over to, you know, ACU-2. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man, I mean, it was the Master Chiefs and the Chiefs that
I didn't
want to be locked in a room with at that time.
And while we were in, because, you know, you were in the early 90s, so you're still dealing with a lot of your Vietnam era guys that are now well into retirement.
Yeah.
You know, age and all of that. So, yeah, they didn't.
And weren't like, you know, their therapy, they weren't going and taking care of whatever they're holding on to from Vietnam, you know. A lot of guys, man, that's where, like you said, with the drinking on bases and everything like that, that was, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. But,
what's one of the funniest stories you feel you can share from your time in service?
Well, you know what? I want to break, and I want to bring up our comrade in arms, Tim Daly.
Mm.
Because you had asked, you know, we're moving through this really, really quick. This is just a brief outline. So I joined the reserves at 30 and obviously come to ACU2 and meet you.
Yeah, like, so, you know, real quick, though, for the virtual audience, you know, you, when you got out after doing your 4 years, you you had that time break in between service. You were a merchant marine.
Yeah.
Worked at the steel mills.
Yeah.
You did all that, and you're just something. What made you get back into the reserves? What called you back in?
I found out that the reserve center in Cleveland had a dive unit.
Oh, that's right. Because you were doing diving for the merchant marines, right?
I went and to a commercial dive school in Camden, New Jersey, and, you know, whatever. So I'm already like 30, 31, so I'm playing with, you know, time is not on my side.
Yeah.
So they put me over in that mud suit unit as a diver candidate, and things didn't work out real well. I'm going through a divorce. I'm in respiratory therapy school, and this one day I came in there, and some fucking chief started screaming some bullshit and wanted to give me the PT test. So they gave it to me in the lake.
Yeah.
they made me do the swim test in Lake Erie, and it was like November.
Yeah.
And the fucking, the funny part, the ironic part about it is I passed it.
Yeah.
I passed that swim and the run. Had some difficulty with the push-ups.
Yeah, because that was after the swim and the
run. Yeah. I mean, Bill, I was so fucking mentally and physically exhausted after that 500-yard swim, and then it's a mile-and-a-half run. I just couldn't do all the push-ups.
Hmm. That was...
So, that Master Chief over there, who's one of your good friends, he's standing in there one drill morning, Saturday morning, whatever, and it's kind of quiet, and I'm kind of just like in the shadows, you know. And he calls me out, and he's like, "You need to find a new home." And a new home indeed. So I came to ACU2, and I'll never forget. I walked through the door. Everybody's in the classroom. I can still see you to this day sitting in a chair up against the wall. And you guys, I don't know what the fuck. You guys are flipping fucking boogers at each other, throwing paper fucking airplanes, just whatever. And I come in, and everybody, you know, everybody, this is Ian 3 Cafaro. He's new to the unit. And I remember you, like, looking over at Mazaros and going, "Castro." I just don't. And then that's where it all fucking started.
I was like, what did you say? Castro?
Yeah, Castro. You know, like fucking Vidal. But I got to throw, and we just lost him.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt that. I wanted to at least bring you.
No, that's fine. Yeah,
definitely.
One of my funniest stories that just stays in my head, and I probably think about it fucking twice a week at least. So here I am in the reserves at ACU2, and there's Ian 1 Tim Daly, our brother,
yeah,
the man, and Corvo. And we're out on an 8 boat doing some bullshit, some maneuver somewhere. I don't know if it was a Port Clinton thing. I don't really remember. But we're out, and there's two lieutenant commanders on board the landing craft.
Yeah, they're going for a ride, and of course they got questions.
Well, they're doing officer stuff, you know, basically standing around with their fucking hands in their pockets and asking stupid questions. So, fucking Corvo and Daly are in the pilot house. And I'm standing on the side with these two.
You got to describe like the pilot house and stuff for everybody.
So it's the pilot house on this boat. It's a landing craft boat. It's about 80 feet long.
It's basically where you control the boat, you know.
Yeah, the pilot house. The pilot house is where
there's
the
windows that you look out of so you can see where you're taking the boat, maneuvering the boat and everything. And
right. You know. Right. It's where you drive the boat from, and it's got windows. So I'm standing on the side, sitting on an ammo box, you know, doing my engine rounds and stuff. And I just come up out of the engine room, and these two lieutenant commanders decide to have a conversation with me. So we're talking. And one of the lieutenant commanders, like, starts getting fucking teary-eyed. And, you know, here I am like, oh, okay. And he starts talking about how he just lost his dad, who was a World War II veteran. Mm. Hey, I dig it, right? Fucking Corvo and Daly are in the pilot house. They got their pants pulled completely fucking down. And Corvo is putting his ass up against the window that's right at the same level of this guy's head.
And behind
behind him.
The guy's got his back to him.
Yeah, and
idea.
Corvo's already a pasty ginger redhead. So you got these slappy red taffy nuts.
Like strawberries.
Yeah.
He's hanging from the vine.
His fucking berries are smacking right up against the fucking window. Obviously, he didn't wipe his ass real good that day. And Daly's making fucking faces. And this guy is telling me about how his father just passed away. And I'm laughing my fucking ass off. And they just put me, like, right on the spot. And don't you know it, like, as soon as he turned around or whatever, they jumped off, you know, the coxswain's flat or whatever and hid.
Yeah.
That is one of the most bizarre fucking...
So was the other officer standing there next to him when the guy was like,
yeah, they never turned their head.
Yeah.
All they would have had to do is have turned their fucking head 8 inches and they would have seen some strawberries and a dirty ass crack.
And I'm just wondering, like, the other officer who wasn't bearing his heart and soul about his dead father to you, like, what was his reaction?
He looked like he was fucking falling asleep.
He
didn't know.
He's just
really.
Like, I'm just tired of hearing about this guy whining about
this is probably like the 10th time this week I've heard this story.
Yeah.
Whatever, I mean, but
is he like, why is this dude laughing?
Yeah. I'm fucking red in the face. I'm fucking laughing my ass off. And this
than Corvo's ass.
Yeah. And this fucking guy, he's got to be looking at me like, man, what a douchebag. I just told you my World War II father died, and you're fucking laughing at me?
Yeah, what the fuck? You know, I'm surprised he didn't, like, lose it. That's
awesome. So, that is, until you've seen a ginger ass pressed up against some glass, buddy,
you haven't lived.
Yeah, you haven't lived, and the guys talk. I mean, I maintain my composure I'm really proud of myself. Because I'd say for about the first 3 minutes, I was cool. Once them fucking red nuts started bouncing off that glass, I couldn't take it. Because they're like even with his head. It's like right there. And I just fucking...
Knock it on the glass like you can't hear it. You know?
I couldn't take it.
Oh, man.
So that is one of my fondest. And, you know, Corvo, what a great guy, too.
Yeah.
So
that
is one of my, you know, that was Mr. Daly.
Yeah, man, I was
just
like
a great guy.
Like I told you, I was going through one of the recordings I did when we all got together when Tim was still with us at the VFW post, sharing stories and just like hearing his voice, man, and hearing all the one of a kind, man. And man, he's definitely missed. Man, there's so many other ACU-2 stories that we could get into, you know, like with Tim, with, you know,
I mean,
some of the shenanigans that we into.
Yeah, you would know better than me because you were there for so long. I mean, for Christ's sakes, you retired out of there. I mean, how many fucking people would you say were 80 people in that unit?
Yeah.
So we've only talked about two.
And there's really, they are special too.
They're very special,
but there's a lot of unique individuals. ACU 2 Cleveland ended up becoming like the reserve unit short bus or something. I don't know. What.
Bunch of window lickers.
We got quite a crew in there. And, we can talk about our boy Luster too, who we just lost.
Then we lost Gary. Just to get off on a side note, it's really bizarre how these last 2 years with me have been. So, fucking last year, at the beginning of the year, my wife gets diagnosed with MS. So, we finally get her on a medication plan and blah, blah, blah. Everything's going okay. Then the beginning of this year, all of us are blessed with the COVID-19 and then the shit that's going on now. So, like, the last 2 years, dude, my head is fucking spinning.
Yeah. And it was like we reconnected through the
VA. Seeing you at the VA.
Yeah, running into you at the VA.
Yeah.
You know, getting our heads checked. And reconnecting and getting together with, we got to spend time with Tim before he passed from
cancer. Yeah, I'm glad we went that day and seen him. I really am.
There's just so many memories that come back. It's like, I hadn't seen you. You were gone for I don't know how long, kind of went off the grid, and saw you, and we just picked right up. There was no gap or whatever.
That's that camaraderie, though, military people have, too. I think some of that's got to play. And that is funny, man. You're up there. Well, you've seen me.
Yeah, through the glass.
Through the glass.
Like, it was like looking at a zoo animal.
Yeah.
It's like looking through the glass, the window licking. I was like, we're like pointing at each other.
Yeah, and then I seen you, and we talked, and you had Brutus, your dog, with you.
Yeah.
I had
a C&P exam or something. So
yeah. So that's
like
been
your mustard states.
Yeah. So that's been like 2 years, and I just remember you saying, Timmy's sick, man.
Yeah.
And
so yeah, and then during this COVID thing, we lose Gary, who's got legendary stories from our time in AC2. And the sad thing was, at least we got to go mourn Tim and see him off for his funeral when he passed, but then Gary passes during COVID.
And you can't do anything. And it's funny because Tim was like right before the shutdown, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, it wasn't too much longer after that. It was like, we're done.
Yeah. So we all knew it was coming. We all got to do what we could do with Tim. And it was sad to see him go. No matter how much you like try and mentally prepare, dude. I mean, I know you came to the wake, and we were there together. I came back the next day for the funeral, and just hearing this little old lady neighbor share Tim's stories, just Tim Daly stories, and there's just so many that we know that we wouldn't be appropriate to share at a place like that. But, man, I just started bawling, man, hearing the story.
It is because just so the audience knows, I mean, we're talking about a dude that was, like, one of the kindest, most caring people in the world. Now, excluding our grotesque sense of humor and the shit that we do, Tim really was a true, heartful fucking guy. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that had anything bad to say about him, unlike probably me or you. There'll probably be a scroll written on
how
big assholes we are, but Timmy was just a good asshole
though. He could be an asshole, but in a fun way. It was endearing.
So I
don't want to make him like a goody two shoes or nothing like that. He was a great guy, and you could definitely count on him to
When you're sticking your fucking ass on a window, you're not a goody two shoes.
Yeah. We'll have to.
You're not Lily White.
I want to get together, eventually get together with some of the other ACU2 guys, and we'll just have we'll have a Tim Daly tribute episode. Or something, share stories. Although so many of them are in the story time from the VFW hall, but let's get back to
yes
to Jim. Worst, you know, we talked about reconnecting at the VA. Let's talk a little bit about experience at the VA. What's been your worst experience at the VA?
You know, I don't want to sound like a bitch, especially with all the stuff the Vietnam era guys went through. I mean, I think the VA healthcare system's greatly improved, but there's always room for improvement. Mismanagement of time and stuff like that, communication problems, scheduling for you for something, and then at the last minute canceling it. And I'm not talking about COVID. I'm talking about stuff way prior to that. Long wait times, paper process fuck-ups, processing screw-ups, stuff like that. But, you know, that's probably normal anywhere.
Customer service was something that, I mean, man, Parma is tolerable. You know, I mean, you get some good people that seem like they really care to help the vets, man. But when I had to go down to Wade Park, I just dreaded the customer service. Like, they don't give a shit, you know? And
I'm getting ready to go there on the 24th. Thank you.
Yeah. So.
For a colonoscopy. Oh, yummy. Yeah. See what kind of customer service I get.
Yeah. I remember when I got mine down there and they had me in the little waiting room, you know, like with, there's like a lineup, like, gentlemen, start your engines, you know, and you're going to go in. And they got the screens on. So I'm getting to see somebody else's colonoscopy happen. You know, like, friggin', we're going in.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, is that? Is, why am I watching this?
That's fantastic.
You know, I'm in the waiting room, but I was actually getting an endoscopy. Mm. They wanted to check my lungs and stuff like that. So I look at the nurse, I say, you ain't going to use the same camera you just used on that guy.
Oh, yeah, here. They just clean it off. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, just wipe it off.
Wash your hands for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Wash the scope.
Just wipe it off.
It's good. So... best experience at the VA. If you got,
best experience would be like my routine physician checks usually always go very well, very on time, very quick. Some of my mental health counselors, that's a very good experience. Pretty to the point, in, out, no, you know, dicking around.
Yeah,
and believe it or not, and this is kind of stupid, but like when I got my VA card, that was probably one of my best experiences because it went so fucking quick.
Yeah,
where some people are waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. So that's it. It's my best experience.
What is one of your greatest hopes for the country, and that you've been willing to give your life for? I mean, today, man, this question is probably really tough, seeing what everything that's going on in our world right now.
You know what? You might have to come back on that question. I don't feel like anything I say on that subject right now is going to be positive.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to have hope for a future when it seems like our youth have been so... you know, brainwashed, for lack of a better
term,
you know, and we could go do a whole episode on college and in school indoctrinations and stuff like that. We both know so much about. So
we'll keep this to an introduction.
We'll table that for another discussion, executive session.
Yeah.
And then what do you feel we can do as a society, or as veterans even, to break the stigma of mental health and PTSD?
Yeah, you know, that's really nice too, because that there is a horrible stigma on that from the general population. I think they think that people that have PTSD are like just these worthless, mindless, you know, people walking around that are, you know, anti this and anti that, and, you know, gun carrying motherfuckers that are just looking to shoot people. To answer your question, I think just bring more awareness to it, more awareness to the situation in a positive light, and actually have conversations with people. But the problem is finding people that are willing to sit down and hear you. And hear people that have PTSD talk about it and say, look, I'm not an evil guy, you know, but I really do think I summarize that pretty pretty good. I from my experiences, I think people look at it as you're just some piece of shit that was in the service and you're just looking to fuck people up and, you know, load weapons and shoot people from hotels in Las Vegas. And, you know, that's not it. That's not it at all.
And I mean, you know, and I know this could take us down a whole nother rabbit hole too, but, you know, just thinking about this, it's like, man, we lose so many brothers and sisters, 22 a day.
Yeah.
You know, they say to PTSD.
Yeah. Suicides
and stuff like that. Where's the outrage? Where's the marches? Where's the organizations, you know, for that? You know, what are we going to do to change that? That's, if veterans don't take it upon themselves to find, you know, form veteran foundations or stuff like that to look out for one another, no, you know, no one else does.
And that's right.
The sad thing.
That's right.
You know, but today's outrage is this, or today's outrage is that, and today's outrage is, you know, it never has anything to do with us. And like I said, that could be a whole nother episode,
right,
too. We could do. We'll do our venting and cleansing.
Yes. Yes.
Down the line. So, you know, here's some of the questions that I normally ask the guests that I have on the show. I know you're a music guy. You play guitar.
Well, I think I play guitar.
Yeah,
really don't.
Well, I mean, it's something
I fuck
that you
around.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Yes.
You fuck around. You enjoy it. You're
I love
fan
it.
Fan of music.
Love it.
You know?
Always have.
Who are your top three favorite musical artists?
Okay. All right. My genres switch. I'm pretty much into everything. I'm not really into rap, and I'm not into, well, any of the more modern stuff. I'm not into whatever. What kind of music is going on today? What kind of rap is that? Like your Lil Wayne's and your Machine Gun Kelly and your Lil Yachty and what is that?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, I'm not that.
Yeah.
I would say that on the rock front, my number one favorite rock band is probably the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Mm.
Yep. You said top three. Man, that's going to be, you know, because I'm a motherfucker that's still stuck in the 80s. I'm still stuck on hair bands.
When you fuck around on the guitar, who do you like to normally?
Well, when I fuck around on the guitar, it'll be like some John Frusciante stuff, the, you know, learning his kind of riffs from the Chili Peppers. I'll fuck with some jazz. Fuck with some old blues kind of stuff. Really no heavy metal. I mean, I might try and do a Metallica piece or something, but
yeah,
I'm still like really stuck in the 80s.
Nah, I got you, man.
Really, dude. When it comes to music, I'm like fucking, and even my wife's like, God damn, dude. Really? I can't listen to Holy Diver by fucking Ronnie James Dio anymore, really? I mean, I don't know.
But,
I tried.
Like back when they played instruments, it wasn't all computer, you know,
yeah,
generated too. There's soul to it.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I'm a big fan of Motown, some of the older stuff there, some country's good. Like I said, I don't discriminate when it comes to music. There's just so much good stuff out there. But it's, to answer your question, it's usually older.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I still like some Disturbed and you know, whatever. But the real heavy stuff, you know, the Marilyn Manson and Pantera and Slayer, them days have left me.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Those days have left me.
Yeah, it just, my neck starts hurting. You know, it comes on immediately. It's like that muscle memory.
Yeah, yeah.
A song that you feel has inspired you in life. Has there been like a go-to, like whenever you're having a bad day or through a dark time, you just turn this one on and it picks you up?
I like Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay.
Yep.
I had a feeling that was going
to
be.
Yeah,
there.
Under the Bridge, Soul to Squeeze has always been one of my go-to songs.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Good. Last book that you read?
The last book that I read was, oh, and this wasn't that long ago. Oh, shit, help me out. The one Kennedy wrote, Profiles in Courage.
Oh, yeah?
What was it? Profiles, whatever the fuck it is.
Nice. What's your morning ritual routine usually like?
Get up. Usually around 5:30. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I go outside. I go outside. I blow the fucking bugle. Raise colors. Old morning quarters.
Pour one on the curb for 1 year.
Yeah. Stuff toilet paper up my ass and run up and down the front yard with it on fire. I get up around, I rise pretty early, get up around 5:30, depending on what kind of errands or whatever have to be, you know, do I have to go to the bank? Do I have to go to the grocery store? Does my wife want something on the grill? Do I have the food in the house? Blah, blah, blah. Take care of my dog, take care of the cats. I usually like to go for a run. I will tell you, I have not been doing that lately.
I don't blame you.
Okay. Like to go right over here.
Our knees aren't what they used to be.
No, ain't nothing on me what it used to be. It's a beautiful track. Like to go see if I can get a half
for our virtual audience. He's pointing out his window.
Yeah, beautiful track right down the street, North Royalton High School. I run around with my new puppy, you know, doggy parks. I teach her how to do doggy push-ups and getting her acclimated to being around people and meeting new people and stuff like that. So she doesn't...
Greeting them by pissing on their feet.
Yeah, you know, how she greeted you and she peed on your foot.
Yeah.
Mostly just hang out around the house. Like I said, it's so hard now to really think about what I was doing 3 months ago after, before COVID. My wife and I were taking martial arts classes. That all stopped. Everything just... But I haven't put on a lot of weight, and I feel good about that.
That's good. Yeah.
Yes, I have. How about yourself, Sexy? How about you? How you doing?
I've actually lost some more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I was to ask you, if you were to step on a scale right now with no shoes on, where are you thinking you'd be at?
247, 250. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And what was your highest?
280 something.
Woo!
Yeah.
Man, oh man, a lot of love in there. I dig it. I know.
Yeah.
And you
stay
feel
puffed. I was staying
no,
puffed.
You feel horrible.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You really do. You bend over. You feel all that fucking protoplasm just curl up.
I was feeling like garbage this morning for my workout with my trainer, man. And I got to give props to Ray Terry. He just not only they're changing my meds since this heart thing, and it's kind of like I get like motion sickness and feeling like crap, you know, when your body's adjusting to new meds. I didn't even want to go in and train this morning, but I went and I gave it my best, and I was like going to do my best to just not go to jiu-jitsu tonight. And the dude just gave me this pep talk. He reminded me of where I was when I first finally walked into that place asking him for help. And, you know, it wasn't like one of the closed door chiefs, motivations that we got. But, I mean, it was good verbal lashing of truth that I needed. I might not be able to give all I was giving before COVID and before the heart thing at jiu-jitsu tonight, but I can still show up, you know, and watch and learn technique.
It's all it takes. So I know this is, you're supposed to be interviewing me, but. So how is the, I assume that the dojo or whatever was shut down the whole time too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, see, now mine just reopened, but there's
we just opened up last week.
So have you been back?
All these, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Back last week. You know, I just can't do open mat full rolls or anything like that. You know, Doc doesn't even want me doing, you know, anything right now, any kind of contact stuff. But, I mean, I'm just going and I'm learning technique. You know, we practice technique. Everybody does their, you know, and then that's it. You know, and then it sucks. You know that. You know, the heart thing was kind of like a blessing in disguise, finding it and whatever. But, you know, anyway.
I can't believe I'm sitting across from somebody that's actually going to be a ninja one day.
Someday. Yes.
That is fucking amazing.
This lifetime.
You're going to be a ninja.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
You know, I mean, I pray for peace, but I got to prepare for war.
Oh.
You know?
Oh.
Anyway.
Yes.
Back to you.
Yes.
Favorite place that you ever visited?
The favorite place I've ever visited, I liked Rota, Spain.
Yeah.
I like Spain. I just thought it was cool.
Was this during active duty or was this...
Active duty, yeah, in the military.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we were supposed to go there and then, you know, shit went down and I was on the carrier, did an about face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more fun happened. Three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today.
Okay, very easy. My grandfather, my Uncle Dennis, and my Uncle Brad.
And were your uncles in the military too?
My Uncle Dennis was. My Uncle Brad was not. My Uncle Brad's 11 years older than me. He was kind of like a big brother, dad, mentor. My Uncle Denny was like a dad, and my grandfather was definitely like a dad. And it's exactly in that order, just like that. Those were the three most important male figures in my upbringing.
Cool. And favorite toy as a child and why?
See, I'm afraid I'm going to get some of this information wrong because it's been so long, but I liked my fucking G.I. Joes, man, and I had a lot of them. I wish I still had them, and I had that Steve Austin...
$6 Million Man?
Yeah, I had this, like, $6 Million Man with the bionic dick and the fucking bionic eye, and you put them in a capsule, and you could play with them, and... That was my favorite fucking toy, man.
I remember, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you had the G.I. Joes, the big,
oh, yeah.
The tall ones, not the Kung Fu grip.
Not the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip. Oh. The G.I. Joes I had hair. They had, like, the fuzzy hair, and you had the foot locker, and that shit was all passed down from my Uncle
Brad.
Did
they have balls like Corvo?
No, their balls actually matched the actual color of their skin. Corvo's testicles were like a red-painted taffy. His nut sack was like a big sack of taffy. Laffy Taffy.
Oh, man. All right, I only got a couple questions.
Sure, that's okay. That's okay.
Do you have a favorite wrestler or MMA fighter?
You know, I haven't been following MMA probably for the last 8-9 years. And my favorite wrestler, once again, old fucking school. I loved Andre the Giant. I know this is going way back.
That's good.
And the Sheik.
The Sheik.
Yeah. And I love him now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Like, do you love him more now on Twitter?
I love him more now. Yeah. I just think I watched a documentary on him, and there were just a lot of interesting things. And, you know, what is it? Don't be a jabroni. And I think the fucking dude's cool. I just think he's laid back. There were a lot. I used to watch, you know, Rowdy Piper, Macho Man.
Yeah.
I mean, Macho Man was the shit too, you know, so... Jesse the Body.
Yep.
But I don't really watch it. Do you watch wrestling still, don't you?
Yeah, I
so
still
like
watch
is
it.
Who's your favorite like now? Because I don't
it's
have
been
one.
I mean, it's been, you know, tough to watch without people in the audience and stuff though, man. And I realize how I'm like, wow, this really is like fake. You know? I mean, it's like the acting's kind of bad.
Really? No, I think wrestlers
fucked
up.
Yeah, no, I agree.
They get
fucked up. I didn't mean to say that to be disrespectful because I got nothing but respect for
right.
wrestlers and what they do, especially today. It scares me to watch. But today, I mean, even though he's been around a while, I'd still say, like, you know, one of my guys that just always keeps me entertained no matter whatever segment he's on is Chris Jericho. That dude is just... I mean, and he inspires me with the podcast and everything. He's got a podcast, and he's all entertaining as all hell, you know. He plays in a band, you know. Yeah. That guy just goes forever. I hope to interview him someday.
Oh, you know what? I also am a big fan of Gene LaBelle.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how much of a... I don't even know if the guy's still living, but I used to like to do a lot of reading about Gene LaBelle because of his joint locks and wrestling techniques and the different... just a big fan. Fan of him. Thought he was a cool guy.
And then, so...
Twice a day. Were you going to ask me how many times I masturbate?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but that's a good one. I'll have to add that for future... future podcast episodes. Any message that you have for our military brothers and sisters currently serving overseas?
The only message that I have is, you know, that I love them and I respect them and they're in my thoughts and prayers. And see, a lot of these things are, you know, we'll go into other things because I think you and I are going to do a whole special on heroes and
all
of that. So they are my heroes. They're my hero. Those are my heroes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we bust on how things have changed and the discipline doesn't seem to be as much anymore. Regardless, man, you still take the oath hasn't changed. You raise your right hand and you swear you're going to give your life and body to.
Still giving something up. And like I said, you look over the last 20 years with the Iraq Afghanistan thing, man. We've lost a lot of people. We've lost a lot of people in the special operations community.
Yeah.
You know, those are a lot of kids without dads. I mean, it's, you know.
So, yeah. So, and you know, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
We'll be hearing, you know, hopefully, like you said, you know, we'll be having you on more.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be hearing more from the life through the eyes of Jim.
We're going to swim out into some deep fucking water, brother.
Yeah.
We're going to swim out into some deep water.
It's going to be a good time, man. Yeah. You know, and we got to get, I got to connect you and Flo, man.
Yes.
You
know. Flo White.
Flo.
I want to do some videos.
Yeah. We'll get you in. I want to get you in there. It's for the Boondoggle Boys or
fucking
whatever.
The Boondoggle.
But, all right, Jim. Hey, man, it's great catching up. And this is the intro to Jim. And, you know, keep listening for more.
Thank you.
Hello, and thanks for listening to today's Boondoggle. And now, for your listening pleasure, Florence Whitingale presents his latest epoch. How do you know if you're fucking a dolphin? Well, you'll know if you're fucking a dolphin if by accident you just happen to stick it in the wrong hole and it screams, "Eh! Eh!"
One day I will soon trade in these grotesque human limbs for a pair of nice and shiny pectoral fins.
So I wanted to get back to God and spirituality, you know, get back to my roots, third and fourth chakra loving. And that's when a friend suggested of me that I go swim with the dolphins, you know, the porpoises. So I paid the $75 introduction fee and I took the class. And later that afternoon, as the sun was setting, we went swimming and that's when I met her. Her name was Christy. Porpoise Christy. The best mammalian sex I ever had. Used to like it in the blowhole.
I'd be jumping through them donuts with my 12-inch bottle nose, and I never get caught in them tuna nets because I'm hitting all them hoes. Yeah!
When I pleased her, she would often reward me with chunks of raw fish. She claimed that I stimulated her intellectually as well as sexually. She used to rub and caress my genitalia with her pectoral flippers. Sometimes the scales would get caught between my teeth, and sweet, sweet Christy, well, she would pick them out. However, looking back now, sometimes I wish, well, I wish one of my friends would have told me that I was fucking a dolphin. Afraid to take a dare, then you best come swim with me, baby! We used to swim under the docks, under the moonlight. We would frolic, play, and dance. We would go out for tuna every night. And this is when I began to realize that we would have to stop going out in public and make our relationship, well, make it a more private one. So I began to devise a plan in order to finalize and consummate our love. So I maxed out all my credit cards for the purchase of a full-size cargo truck equipped with an 800-gallon salt water tank. I mean, after all, I would need it in order to haul Christy to my parents' vacation home in Miami, Florida. Some park aquarium. So grab my mighty dorsal fin and let me rock your planetarium. Woo! When we finally got to my parents' house, I immediately took Christy from the tank and placed her into the pool. Ha ha! You know, I could tell she was so happy to be free from that goddamn tank just by the manner in which she squeaked to me. So, I immediately ran into the house and changed into my swimming trunks. And when I got back to the pool, Christy was lying there, belly up, lifeless. I began giving her mouth to hold rescue breathing. To my sad, unfortunate disbelief, Christy was dead. Oceans using my echolocation, and when you deep down below these waves and you hit the porpoise nation, yeah! You see what I didn't know was that my stupid jackass old kid brother, well, he had shock treated the pool earlier that day with large amounts of chlorine, and poor Christy had died of chlorine poisoning. It had to have been well over 60 parts per millionth. I mean, way above the suggested FDA limit for dolphins. Because she died in my care, and I transported her over state lines. It all became federal, and I am now serving out my 5-year sentence here at Allenwood Federal Prison Camp. I've got to ask you people, haven't you ever fell in love with a dolphin? Have you ever made love with a dolphin? Have you ever jumped through hoops with a dolphin? I tell you, it's kind of like golfing. It's like hitting them holes, hole in one. I'm talking a 9-iron here.
Yeah, now I know that last song was like daddy coming home. And you know you want more. And coming soon, you can find it at theflowwhiteshow.com. But for now, feel the flow. Exclusively here on today's brought to you by today's Boondoggle.
You're an evil woman.
With evil on her mind.
Now don't start that. You look like Mary.
Yes, well, I had everybody at the Cleveland Rocks where we worked. The office lady, Mary, big giant black woman. And I'd worked there 2 years before brought him on. Going great and everything. All of a sudden, she's treating me different when Tim's around. I as well told her I was the head of the fucking
Aryan
Nation. I was the grand poobah or some shit of the Aryan Nation in our district and all that.
That's kind of fun.
We're at this dinner party up in Toledo, and she's sitting across from me, and Tim's over here, and he's trying to flip quarters into her big giant boobs, and she's trying to stuff them in it. She's looking at me like, I'm like, what the hell, Mary? What's going on? Nothing. Tim's over there smirking.
Hi, Annie.
Nice. Yeah. Until he told me what he did, and I'm like, what the fuck? No wonder, you know, give her an attitude against me.
She had asked the question of like, man, he looks like he could be one of those guys. What a Nazi dude.
That's like opening up a free door to him.
And I'm like, what's that? Where did you say that?
I probably shouldn't tell you this, but
but I mean, I
as a matter
and
of fact,
when I found out she was genuinely like concerned. I'm like, oh my god, no.
Yeah, I don't know. They kind of don't joke about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't really get the punchline.
They don't.
I do want to apologize for that.
Yeah. One of my payroll is screwed up for months.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.